Blog Talk Radio.
For the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. Jeremy?
Paulie.
How are you?
You know, I've seen better days. Kevin Cobb era is over.
Essentially it's over before it even really started.
I know. And we're wondering if it was an era. Was it an era or a moment?
Might have been a moment. But
you know,
speaking of which, it is McNabb week here. Donovan McNabb makes his much-anticipated return to Philadelphia as he leads his Washington Redskins into Lincoln Financial Field. When we looked at this matchup in the summertime, we all figured, okay, McNabb against his understudy, Kevin Cobb. But little did we know at that time that his other understudy, Michael Vick, would be the guy who would be leading the Eagles as their starting quarterback. And let's be honest, Michael Vick has played great, great, great football. And before we get to this topic, let me just say we have Isaac Keys coming up, an ultimate merger star and former NFL player. We're going to talk football and more with him and what's going on with him. And also Jared Cooper, former Raiders and former Carolina Panthers star. He would join us also here tonight. But back to Michael Vick, I mean, the guy, in the past 2 weeks, almost 300 yards of passing. People say it was against the Jaguars and it was against the Lions, but this guy has not done this before. This is a guy who looks poised. This is a guy who has a pocket presence. This is a guy who's using his legs not to run, but using his legs to keep himself alive and keep the plays alive to make plays down the field. And he made some plays down the field this past week. I mean, the guy played well. He played very well. And he's played very well in the past 2 weeks.
The only thing I give Andy Reid credit for in all his lies and deception was at least the admission that because of the offensive line, Kevin Cobb really was never going to be able to succeed, which was very true. But with regards to Michael Vick, I mean, he's a much more, it seems like in these two games, Paul, a more accurate passer than he ever was in Atlanta. I don't know if that's me because now at least he has a really strong core of receivers. You know, I know they talk about the fact that Reed and Morningweger are working with him. But, I think he looks as good as he may have ever looked. It's two games, and look, we learned even with Kevin Cobb, two games is not going to make a career. But I think you have to remember, 2 years that he had off, I mean, I certainly think it may have, for him, done his body well. It may have been a springboard, for him to do even better.
And we talked about, and I talked about that on the show. I mean, Michael Vick is 30 years old, but he's 28 years old in football. He's got his football years. I mean, he's missed 2 years these past 2 years, 2 years, and spent time in prison, obviously. And in those 2 years, he wasn't obviously taking the hits that a quarterback takes to his body. And, man, the guy looks great. I mean, if you told me, like, I was hearing this question, this is a interesting question. I wrote the same McNabb song over the summer, and, I was a guy who was pushing to keep Donovan. But if I knew what like Vic was and what he has shown, I don't think Dave McNabb ever would have been written. I would have never written that song, and that song never would have made this air. I didn't know. Again,
Let me ask you this, Paul, and it has only been two games. But are you recanting Save McNabb post?
I'm not recanting Save McNabb, but I definitely would have given it a little more thought. I mean, Save McNabb definitely is a song, it's a beautiful song, and a song that is near and dear to my heart. And Donovan again is a guy who he comes in, leads his Redskins into Lincoln Financial Field 1-2. The team came off a tough loss against the Rams, and kind of inexcusable loss against the Rams. And it wasn't one of his best performances, one of Donovan's better performances. And he threw for 236 yards and one touchdown, but the week before he threw for over 400 yards against the Texans. And but if you look at it right now, this Redskin team is coming in, a team that's struggling a little bit. They actually should be 2-1. Because they should have won that Texan game, but they had a lead in that game, 27-10, the third quarter. But they squandered the lead, and ultimately lost the game in overtime. But again, Donovan played well in that game, and the reality of it is right now, Donovan says to the world and saying to all of us that this game is just another game. I mean, if he believes that, then my name is Barack Obama. I mean, if you believe
my name is Barack Obama.
I mean, this is a big game for him.
You know, Paul, I'll tell you, but you know, well, I tend to sometimes, I definitely say it's not just another game for him. I think, you know, I think people don't understand when athletes say that really what they mean, and maybe it is because they're not totally articulating themselves. But I do believe that an athlete of Donovan McNabb's caliber, and I say an athlete as well as an athlete and a businessman, I think that most of the sound players in the league, and he's one of them, they want to retire. He wanted to retire an Eagle. He wanted to have that legacy. But I think at the end of the day, after it happens, they don't really care. Paul, you better than anyone are pushing for the fact that these athletes need to go out there and make the amount of money that's best for them. I think McNabb recognized that, you know, for him, this is a good opportunity to continue a career in the NFL as a starting quarterback in a town where he's going to maximize his abilities. So I don't think he's really that broken up.
Well, he's in a town also where they haven't had serious quarterback play in ages. I mean, who was the last good Redskin quarterback, I guess, who would you go to? Who was the last good Redskin quarterback?
I mean, you have to go back to Rippon. You go back to me to
Mark
Rippon.
I was about to say Mark Rippon, and he wasn't a great quarterback. He was a guy who won a championship, but, I mean, other than
arguably,
that, he
wasn't you go back to Doug Williams, who, again, wasn't – Doug Williams had flashes. I mean, he had a – I don't think he was – he's not – and I don't – that's why I say I completely agree with you. McNabb here, Paul, can almost – but it would be – probably the first player maybe in NFL history to – he can have five good years, you know, with the Redskins. And, I mean, Daniel Snyder has proven that if he thinks the player is going to help his team, money is not going to be an issue. And with a quarterback like McNabb, I mean – and they have a coach like Shanahan, I think McNabb can have a very good medium-term career with the Redskins. And that's why I say I don't think he's that broken up about this. I don't.
Well, I'm not sure if he's broken up at this point. Maybe he was a tad hurt in the beginning, but I think at this stage he's resigned to the fact that it is what it is and the situation is what it is. And you look at Donovan, I mean, this is a big opportunity for this guy. You know darn well that Donovan wants to go out and play his heart out and put up big, big numbers. But we're now being joined by former NFL star Isaac Keys. Isaac?
Well, Paul, you're too much than an NFL star. You're too much.
Well, I mean, you are what you think of yourself, and I personally think you're a star. I mean, there's 53 men on the roster. You made the roster, so you're a star.
Yeah, man, I'm like a blue-collar Hall of Famer. That's what I call myself.
Isaac, I mean, let's start with football now. I mean, you're a former NFL star, and you see a guy like Michael Vick going out here and playing the way he is playing. Well, what's your thoughts on Michael Vick?
My thoughts is he's doing what he's capable of doing. I mean, timing is everything in this league. And, you know, as we all know about it, because history has presented it to be true, is that when the light shines on you, you have to take advantage of that light. He had opportunity to get a chance to play. He shined. Same way Tom Brady did when Bledsoe messed up. And, you know, the list goes on. So it's just he shined at that time. And now it's like one of them, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type things.
No, are you surprised that he's coming? He's turned himself into almost, if you remember Randall Cunningham back in '98, he almost turns himself mm-hmm. into that type of player. Randall was a runner, and now Michael Vick, like Randall, has learned at least in these first two games to work the pocket and utilize his legs to throw the ball down the field.
Exactly. What we used the game plan on Michael Vick was to make him throw the ball because his downfall, his weakness, is extremely important. It shows that his accuracy was not as good as, you know, some of the other quarterbacks you may face in the league before all this transpired. So we used to do, like, straight corral exercises or things just to try to corral, you know, say, okay, we're going to keep him from running the ball and make him throw the ball. But now as you see that he's throwing the ball down the field. Now, Michael Vick has always had a very strong arm. He releases the ball. It looks like he's not even throwing it that hard, but it gets downfield. And people don't pay attention to that. And now, you know, he's had the chance and the time to really be coached up. And I think by being a backup from last year and coming to, you know, the campus of this year has allowed him to really pay attention to learn defenses and how to read them and to throw the ball downfield.
But Isaac, I think you raised an interesting point that and you played against him. And one of the things I said to Paul in defense of him, at least in Atlanta, was if you look at the receivers that he had during his tenure there, the only one that you make the argument that had some level of skills was Roddy White, but he played with Roddy White when he was a rookie. And now you look at the team he's on, and I sometimes wonder, in Atlanta, how much in terms of a bad rap did he get? Because they never brought him in the caliber of receivers he's playing with now.
I don't know, because if you look at the receivers that Philadelphia have, they don't really have an outstanding receiver you're looking at. They have DeSean Jackson. And they have Jerry Macklin. But Jerry Macklin is a young receiver. DeSean Jackson is a young receiver. But he had Algie Crumpler when he was with the Falcons. He had Roddy White. And I can't remember the other guy's name. He had the tall Caucasian guy, Jared Mitchell.
We're not going to call him Caucasian. We're going to call him the white boy, first of all.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm just trying
to
be
white boy.
On wrong radio. He might have been Italian as well.
Close enough.
But he had, you know, he had receivers there. It's just, I think now it's just his timing. You know,
I think arguably, and I guess it's only his third year, but I think, Paul, help me out. You're the name guy. DeSean Jackson is definitively, I think, much stronger receiver than any of the, even Algie Crumpler. Because DeSean does for Michael Vick's arm what he needed to be done, which is he can throw the ball even 30 yards, 40 yards, and DeSean can catch it in stride and run with it. And they have a guy like Macklin who is definitively a very strong possession receiver and can get the deep ball. I think for Michael Vick right now, plus he's older, I think the fact that he has recognized, and like Paul said, he's modeling his game much like a Randall Cunningham. And Paul, I think during the week used Steve Young. I think it's a stretch to call him a Steve Young, but I see him now recognizing that he doesn't have to run out of the pocket and go past the line of scrimmage. Running out of the pocket for him now means stretching the play to see if he can pass it longer down the field.
Right. And to concur with that, in the sense that, you know, as you get older in this game, you learn that you cannot just rely on your talent. You have to start relying on your experience and your knowledge of the game. When I first entered the league, I was like, why are these guys getting to the ball faster and they get to the passer faster when I know I'm faster than them and I'm more agile than them? It's because they were more experienced and they knew the game better than I did. And I think this time, you know, it's come around that Vick is, you know, he knows he has a talent, but now he's relying on the other part of the time as far as the mental aspect of the game and the knowledge that he's learned over the time period. Now, on the other hand, I feel like, you know, one minute everybody was, you know, just up against him. Everybody was up like, oh, why he named the starter? Now he's starting. He's blessed, and I'm glad he had a great game when he came out in his debut as the starter. this past game. But let's just remember, you know, it's still early in the season, and let's just hope and wish him well. But let's not just jump and all start to start comparing him. Oh, he's the next round of Cunningham. Because, I mean, Vic was Vic. He was his own category before. He didn't, nobody else was like him. Nobody was, he was Michael Vick, and you compared everybody else to him. So I still want to continue to do that. It's just the fact that now, you know, he's trying to develop his game a little bit more.
And real quickly with Vic, I don't know if you knew the guy before he went to prison, but it seems like now this guy he's humbled himself and really is really trying to take advantage of this moment. He has really no choice but to humble himself if he wants to stay in the league.
Yeah, he better humble himself. He got to.
Do you sense a different guy?
You know what, man, it's hard. I'm one of the people because being on the inside and not doing outside looking in, it's like, how you can go, you know, I don't know him personally like that, per se, but he has to, you know, provide an image that can continue to give him, to help him prosper and be liked amongst the community. And I imagine that he is that type of guy. So, you know, I mean, all I can do is just say that, you know, get what I see from him. And, you know, I just, you know, I'm always on the twofold, you know, he's on one side, and then on the inside looking at it, you know, things are different on the inside. You know, he's walking on, you know, eggshells right now. Whether now it's not even about the trial and being in prison, now it's about him being a starting quarterback and facing the scrutiny of that.
Right. Now, I want to move to the Vikings, a former team of yours, and a team right now is 1-2, a team that's, in my opinion, is going to take a step back this year. Looking at the Vikings, are you in agreement, or do you think this team will get itself back to the NFC title game? Because you got the Bears in that division who's playing well. You also have the Green Bay Packers who's playing well. But how do you see the Vikings?
I see the Vikings, as you just said, first of all, they're in a very tough division right now, and there's really no room to falter. Because, one, you know, as right now they're 1-2, they're already behind the eight ball. But I think they're going to be a team that can compete. I mean, you know, they put so much emphasis on the Brett Favre thing. I mean, Brett Favre really can only take them so far. I mean, it's as simple as that. He's only taking them so far. His mind is in it. But I still kind of feel his heart is not in it. If it is, it's just not, you know, strong enough right now. We like to believe that we can do something to the best of our ability. But honestly, what else can he prove more than what he did last year? If that wasn't the right horse to ride off on, then I don't know what is. Because to come back and try to accomplish all that again this year, that's a tough feat to handle. That's tough. And, you know, the Vikings
well, that's a tough feat for anybody. But that's tough,
exactly.
And that's one of the things that Paul and I have said. To mirror that play, even at the, and especially like you said, at this level, it's just in terms of age, I think it's impossible.
I pretty much kind of, you know, I like saying things are possible, but, you know, the biggest things you take from this game is the camaraderie. You miss the camaraderie. I don't care if it's in the off season or whether you don't play a season. You miss being in that locker room. You miss being around your teammates. And when they pulled a shady card by having the teammates go down there and talk to him and then bringing them back, because you can't turn your teammates down. It's just too hard because it's like leaving them on an island and not going to help them. You know what I mean? And even though they want him so bad, it still may not have been the best decision for him, in a sense. But at the same time, he's there, and he's going to do everything he can and possibly to win. So that's what's important. But it's going to be tough right now, man. Green Bay Packers looking great. Chicago is right there at their heels. And Minnesota's going to have to, you know, try their best. I mean, put Detroit at the bottom, but even Detroit may sneak up and beat you a second game around.
Now, Isaac, I get the sense that Minnesota may need some defense help, specifically some linebacker help. Jeremy and I was wondering if we could go down and grab you up and bring you back to Minnesota.
Well,
now, we don't have a jet.
That would be a negative. That would be a negative. As much as I would like to, I think I know my limit right now. I'm on to the next chapter right now. We're gonna cut this check in a whole other field this time.
And let's go on to the next chapter of Isaac Keys. Right now, Isaac, I mean, you came off the Ultimate Merger show, and now you were in a play called For the Sake of the Children, and you played a police officer. Talk about how all that came about.
I think, you know, by being on that reality show, Ultimate Merger, it kind of helped set a platform of Isaac Keys without the helmet, without the, you know, the jersey. So now people kind of, you know me for more of me and my personality. And the director, William Pierce, basically, you know, watched the show, seen the show, and he also, you know, be realistic. He wanted some eye candy, wanted a little notoriety to kind of go along with the play, You know, he's been taking over the scene on in the Minnesota, St. Paul area, and wanted a little more, you know, eye candy go along with it, notoriety. So he brought myself in, Little G from Silk, and then Sad G, who plays on some of the Madea Family Union plays and shows and stuff, too. And honestly, I think it, you know, I may have benefited him a lot, but he was really benefiting me a lot because that was my first play. And there's nothing like a play. You ask anybody in this genre of entertainment, there's nothing like a play because there's no cut. There's no cut.
Okay, I was going to ask you that.
There's none of that. And you are acting with other actors, so you have to be able to be able to improv. You have to be able to just be on your toes to be able to help them. They forget their lines and they help you. It's just it's like running out on kickoff team. It's basically
right.
Like the first thing for the football. Running out on kickoff team, your head on the swivel, knowing what you're supposed to do, but it may not always work out that way. So let's make a play.
Right.
So it's like that, but it was a great. I mean, a great opportunity, and I learned a lot. And just the scene that I played that I had, you know, just the same couple of scenes, I learned a whole lot. That's gonna help me later on down the road.
Now, do you think it's helped you progress as an actor?
Yes, it's definitely helped me progress as an actor because, I mean, like you said, it's learning your lines, but then being able to go out there and perform your lines and really just act off others. You know, I've done commercials,
right.
I've even done pilots, and I've been on set of the movie and stuff. You know, those times, you know, they can say cut or, you know, line, give me a line. No, it's none of that. And you have to be able to hold in the laughter, especially this is a play with a, you know, with a comedy as well, you know, as a drama. It's a mixture of both. So, you know, you have to be able to hold it in when you want to laugh and everything and kind of move on and go on with the play. So I'm just, you know, related to the fact that I was able to do it, but it's how much it's helped me and grown. Like, I'm excited for the next auditions or something. I'm excited for the next thing. I feel like I've grown so much already as an actor.
Now, I see you now. You grace the cover of a couple magazines, Suave and Sheen, to be exact. I mean, your popularity is growing. I mean, are you amazed by your popularity right now?
You know, it's always a shock. I'm humbled by it, you know. And, I mean, it's like I still don't consider myself, I mean, on a small scale, I consider myself, you know, you can consider myself as popular. But, you know, it's like somebody told me, you know, you have to become famous before you start making money off of this whole thing. And I said, well, I'm going to try my best to become famous and just let the whole thing roll. But right now, things are good. I mean, they're kind of like happening in a great timeline where it's like one thing after another. Face video. I just did Face video. I love entries, and it's out right now. And our hit thing are gone already. And that was my first video. But I remember setting goals for myself last year saying I wanted to be in a video, I wanted to be in a play, two commercials, and a movie. So right now, we're just looking more or less for the movie. I've accomplished everything up on that list. I mean, they didn't happen right away, but they happened. So, you know, that's the thing, setting goals and continue to keep pressing on. And I just really have some good people, you know, behind me right now, and let alone the fans and people that's trying to attach themselves to me.
I think it would be interesting to hear, because you had made, an interesting comment about, you said you have to become famous in order to become financially successful in Hollywood. How different is the transition from being a professional athlete to trying to become, you know, a celebrity or a professional actor?
It's different, and then there's a lot of similarities. The difference is, I mean, you know, actually it's kind of similar. Like, before these athletes become first-round draft picks, what do? They became popular on the college, on the collegiate level. They became famous on the collegiate level, and then that carried over into being a professional football player and getting them to cut that check on the draft day. When this acting thing is, no, everybody, there's a million actors out here. It's like there's a million football players out there. So it's like about getting to know, it's just, you know, kind of taking care of your small area. So, like, let me take over doing some plays here, building my experiences up on things that I do and build the craft up and then get my name out so people get to wonder, like, who is this kid? The same way, you know, Abram's going to do for Alabama. He's getting people to know who he is, winning the Heisman Trophy, getting people to know exactly the running back from Alabama, getting people to know who he is. I'm doing the same thing. So it's like now when I go into the audition, the producer's like, well, he has a following, and, you know, people like him, and I can see him in his role. But you know what? The kid can really act. Isaac Keys really can act. So that's a no-brainer. Let me put him in this movie because people are going to want to see him. And he's going to be able to hold the role down. He's going to be able to act beside Idris Elba, act beside Sanaa Lathan or Gabrielle Union or you know, Julia Roberts, or, you know, or Sandra Bullock. You know, because so now it's like building yourself up to the point where people say, you know what, I need this kid. I need him to be in my next movie. It's like the athlete. I need him to be on my team to help my team win.
Now, Isaac, we talked to Jared Bunch, who used to play football for the Giants and now is an actor himself, and he was talking about how he went through all his football money and now he's just working on all his acting money. What's going on with you? Did you go through your football money now, and now you're just living off this acting money now?
What football money? What football money? No, it was, you know, honestly, with me, I never got that big break in football. So it's like I was living. I mean, I was making some money, but, you know, going from practice squad to active roster and then having 6 months off in the off season, all you can really do is try to find ways to invest that money to other things and to carry on. Like I told you before, people get the misconception and think that everybody's a millionaire playing football. You're put on that pedestal with other millionaires, so you camouflage yourself into that whole, you know, persona. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's the case for you personally, and that wasn't the case for me personally. You know, I was able to do some things to help take care of myself, take care of my money, put myself in a situation where I'm taking care of myself. But at the same time, you know, things weren't as prosperous as people may have seen with all the money things and issues. But with that being said, I mean, I have my pension, so that's something I will have, you know, when I get to that age, and I need to get that cracking off. And right now, it's just, you know, it puts me in that stage where I'm in the grind phase, and actually, I work better when I'm in grind phase, because you don't have the leisure of just sitting at home and waiting for somebody to do something for you. You got to get out there and do it yourself. So it kind of takes you back to when I was trying to get to the league. And if I was on that grind phase, I need you to know who I am. I need you to see me and give me an opportunity. I'm not going to accept no for an answer.
Now, you talked about the Faith Evans video, and I mean, I really like the song, her hit single, Gone. You like you said, you're playing the lead male actor in this particular video. How'd you go about landing that role?
You know what? Just kind of, I just touched on. I landed the lead and Gone already because people thought of me when they were looking for a lead. Simple as that. I didn't audition for it. I didn't know anything about the cast. And I was actually in Pittsburgh working on as an extra role in a new film that John Singleton is doing. And I was out there in the extra role. Somebody called, a friend of mine called me. That's Francis Faith. And then actually another guy that was worked with our publicist knew, and they brought up, you know, we need a guy. I tracked a guy for this video. I had two people from two different angles call me about the video, and then I talked to her personally. And I said, look, I'll be in town the next morning. Let's do it. I mean, you know, and it's as simple as that. And I mean, it's hard, but as simple as that. And, you know, it's just because people, like I said, once you get out there and kind of meet people, you just hope that they keep you in mind when something pops up. And you never know when it's going to happen.
Now, do you have any auditions coming up or anything in terms of acting, any sitcoms, any movies coming up for you?
I had a couple auditions. This came from Atlanta. I'm actually working and doing some things with McDonald's right now. McDonald's is doing on a cafe man launch, and I'm kind of serving as that cafe man kind of spokesperson in some of the African-American consumer markets type thing. So I just came back from the Atlanta Football Classic, where it was FAMU versus TSU, Tennessee State University, where we did a kind of initiative as the McCaffrey man, launching it out there, getting people involved. And McCaffrey man is just such. It's such as a man who's doing things in the community, was mentoring, just involving himself in positive activity, an adult, you know, just kind of really pushing it out there and create positive things to happen. Basically setting the standards and being a trendsetter, and along with McDonald's, because as you know, McDonald's is deeply rooted in the community and everything that they do. So I'm doing that, and I just have auditions and a couple scripts, and, you know, things are rolling in, bro. I can't lie about that. I'm just trying to make sure I'm ready on my end.
Now, you went on Omarosa's show, Ultimate Murder, looking for love. At this stage of the game, are you still a bachelor? Are you in any type of relationship?
I'm still a bachelor,
What's
bro.
Going on relationship-wise with Isaac Keith?
Right now, man, I'm getting a lot of hits on Facebook and Twitter and everything, but I'm still a bachelor. I'm still a bachelor, and, you know, sometimes I have to say, when you get caught up in this game, it takes the right woman to really be able to come in and be able to accept everything that you're trying to do with yourself. And I tell you, probably it's harder, and you know, you may be able to relate, but just in, you know, general, when you're involved in this entertainment business and you're trying to put so much of your energy in that, it's hard to really kind of differentiate and put that energy over to a relationship as well, too. But, you know, I think when the right person comes along, I'm going to make it happen just like I've made anything else happen in my life.
No, Isaac, I mean, I don't need that stress. I got my wife at home, so I'm good.
Right. There you go. You found your teammate.
Now, with you, Isaac, I mean, has the standard changed in terms of the woman you're looking for, or is it still the same? I mean, because right now, I mean, you're doing well for yourself, and big things are happening for you. So has the standard changed?
I mean, I don't think the standard really changed. I've never been one to really just settle just to be a relationship just because. So it's always about, you know, trying to find that person that I feel like could be my teammate. As I just said, you know, it's a partnership. But I need her to understand who I am, and her to be open enough for me to understand who she is. The standard is basically a good woman. I mean, of course, you need to be attractive, at least attractive to me. But a good woman who's very understanding, supportive, and, you know, and has a spiritual relationship. And, you know, we just can push it. We see. It's funny because right now you got all these, you know, man, I mean, all these little women, you know, these women may be hitting me up and things of that nature, but it's funny because the one that you may want is not necessarily, does not necessarily want you back. It's a tough game out here,
right,
Bob. Just because he's getting you up don't mean that you're happy. It's because you're around a lot of people.
Now,
where
you going to look for women? I mean, you talked about spirituality. Are you going to church possibly to meet women? Are you going to the club? I mean, where is the guy like Isaac Keys?
I'm going to the First Episcopal Church on the south side corner of Broadway and Martin Luther King.
That's
an everything. I'm out here working, man. I mean, I don't have a particular spot where I look for a woman. I feel like she could be anywhere.
Living in a supermarket? Home for a woman, supermarket?
Ain't nothing like going to the grocery store about 11 or 12 o'clock at night while I'm around shopping. That's what you feel like.
Now, Isaac, you're a guy who is known for his jokes, and you're a jokester, and you know, last time you were on the show, you said a joke to us, and I want you to hear it. Take a listen.
Yeah, man, I'm off of the dime piece, man. Yeah. That was a joke. Party, you know, man, that was a joke. That wasn't a joke, man.
Oh, you said I'm off of the dime piece. I mean...
I wasn't a joke. You took it as a joke. Hey, you know, it's just a dime piece, man. It's a dime piece and a dime piece and a bank full of quarters. Look, look. Oh, man, y'all silly, man. No, uh-uh. That's,
you know,
yeah,
not y'all. Isaac, let me make it clear, not y'all in this instance. Paul is silly.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to laugh at it. It's like a child, you know, playing around. It's cute and it's funny. Thankfully, it's not mine.
Right, but he going to think, and then next thing you know, he going to see some blog, I'm also chewing my head off and everything else, now I got to deal with that. See, I'm talking about, look, y'all know how she is. Y'all know she will get on there and try to ruin everything. So I just keep it real cool and peaceful, man. Maybe I'll take it back to the streets of St. Louis.
Nah, I think we just having a good time,
sir. That's what it's always about, man. And we need more people to take it as that, too. That's what we need. Want people to take it as a good time.
Isaac, I mean, you did the Ultimate Merger show, and did you expect it to really? I mean, a lot of you guys seem. I see Ray; he's got a couple. You know, he's doing his music thing, and it seems like a lot of you guys are really, really taking advantage of this opportunity. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised, and are you surprised how well this really turned out for you guys?
I actually. I'm going to tell you this, Paul. Actually, I expect a little bit more, honestly.
Wow. Okay.
I just really felt like there was so much more they could have did, because this is the first show that is displaying minority, especially African-American, in a positive professional light. And people, I think, missed out on it. Some people missed out on it just because of, you know, maybe, I don't know what it is, maybe finances, budgets, and things like that. TV1 is going to be a great channel. But I think they worked and they did very well what they had to work with. But it being a show like this, it's no doubt that it would have been so much bigger if it was on one of the other networks that was a larger network. Just because people, you know, would have been able to, the people are used to going to some of the other networks. We had to corral people over to TV1. And this is my honest opinion. Now, I appreciate everything that's happened. I think what we did is people who, like myself and Ray and Al, is that we knew what we're up against is that, look, we need to take advantage of this opportunity. So we started getting things aligned in order to try to really take advantage of being on this show. Now, that doesn't mean we didn't put in the effort to really get to know Omarosa and really put ourselves on an avenue to be able to get to know her and continue on with the show. But we also knew that if we were chosen, if we were not, life is still going to go on. So we still need to be able to kind of, you know, keep pushing and create, you know, a platform and a brand for ourselves. So that's what really happened. But, I'm nothing against TV One. It's nothing. I just want some more. That's because my standards are just high. I want to take it up to the highest mountain.
Now, we'll leave you with this now, Isaac. Will you go down reality? Will you do reality TV again, or would you be interested in doing reality TV?
Paul, I'm in the business right now where it's, you know, I'm not gonna say I would never do reality TV. I'm not gonna say that. But right now, my interest right now is totally into, you know, to act and playing characters in the movies, whether it's sitcom or whatever it may be. That's just what my interest is. If somebody brings something to the table that makes sense, then we'll look at it. But, you know, I've done my part of reality TV. I got my taste of it, and I saw what it was like. And, you know, right now I'm just concentrating on really the whole acting thing and just kind of really interested in being characters and playing roles. So that's just where I'm at right now. But I'm not going to say I will entertain the thought.
No, Isaac, we thank you for stopping by, sir. It's your third time here on the show. It's good to have you. Always good to talk to you. You're a good guy, a lighthearted guy. You like to have a good time, man. And, you know, we wish you nothing but the best of luck here.
Man, I appreciate it. You guys are the best. You guys keep doing what you're doing. I need everybody to please check me out. It's Isaac Keys on Facebook, Isaac Keys on Twitter, and the website, IsaacKeys.com, will be coming soon. I'm working on it. You can see a little something on there, but it's not finished. So just go ahead and check it out, though. And I thank you all
again
for
everything. Make sure you go to IsaacKeys.com. Hit him up on Facebook and hit him up on Twitter. Isaac, nothing but the best of luck for you in the future, sir, and you're always welcome back anytime.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me back. You guys keep doing a great job over there.
Take care.
All right, take care, sir.
All right. You guys too. Bye.
Isaac Keys, former NFL player, now actor, so he's made the transition. But now we're being joined by former Oakland Raider, former Carolina Panther, Jared Cooper. Jared, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good today. How about you?
Doing well, doing well. Jared, let's get right into it, sir. You're a guy. We saw the first week. We saw Kevin Cobb and we saw Stuart Bradley. Both of those guys, especially Stuart Bradley, a guy who looked punch drunk pretty much, and he was put right back into the game. And you're a guy who has been through the concussion thing. And do you when you see things like that, do you question the NFL's commitment to dealing with the issue of concussions?
Well, the problem with the NFL's commitment is, when it comes down to it, it's not their decision. You not one time was there a man on that field that was going to tell me that, hey, Jared, you're not going to play because you have a concussion. There's no way. You know, and you know, that sounds dumb for me to say, but I'm going to tell you, you know how it is. The NFL is, you get your spot taken in a heartbeat. The moment you lay down, the moment you take a, you know, a 10-minute rest, someone will take your spot, and you may not never get it back. You may not never. You like that double negative?
That was cool. That was cool.
Yeah. So, you know, it's who you can't unless it's to the point where you're blacking out, you're going to play. And the only way the NFL is going to change this ever is, you know, you're not going to change it with any of the guys now. You're going to have to, you know, educate people coming up. You're going to have to tell kids, you know, you're going to have to teach them a different way of playing football. I mean, football's getting easier and easier. You can't tackle people that hard anymore without getting a $20,000 fine. So now, I mean, you know, you're going to have to teach people. The high school and up, and you're not going to do anything about it now because these guys are going to play football regardless.
Now, have you ever been in a situation where you have blacked out after a game, after one of your concussions, or been in a situation where you remember playing, but you don't really remember a lot of the game?
Oh, yeah, a lot of times. And you know what? The scarier part is when you watch film on Monday and you're watching a game tape and you're like, and you don't remember what happened. You're like, I don't remember that happening. But, you know, at the same time, you don't remember not remembering. You know, you thought you were there. And, you know, there's a risk playing football. That's why everyone can't do it. There's going to be repercussions smashing your head into stuff nonstop. I mean, you do it from your 8 years old to 30, you know, something's going to happen to you. You know that. So, you know, you just kind of roll with it. You know, you know you're taking the risk. You know the risk from day one. you know, it's not much you can do unless you're going to educate your players.
Do you really think that, that all of the NFL players, even today, but especially when you were playing, do you really know the risks of, like, long-term body damage, especially neurologic damage, as a collegian and then a professional athlete? The NFL teams, do they do a good job of disseminating information on the risks that, you know, athletes will face?
No.
It's interesting why I think that, and that's why I bring it up, and I'd be certainly interested to hear your take. And certainly the business relationship, they don't need a player to know that there can be devastating neurologic defects later in life, because you're certainly may not going to make that tackle or maybe not going to go across the middle. But certainly do athletes now, where they do have a conscious ability to go out and seek the knowledge, are they doing it? Are professional athletes saying, you know what, let me go learn more about what happens in post-concussion syndrome or what happens in retirement?
Well, just recently they're educating, but even with the education you're getting now, they don't, you know, they're not unveiling every single bit about, you know, the concussion syndrome that's going on. And, you know, you're forgetting about one major, you know, player in this, and that's money. Money's going to make that player get back on the field. Money's going to make that trainer look away and be like, all right, well, maybe he can try it. I mean, it's, you know, there's always rumors about, you know, dirty dealing going on in training rooms and stuff. And, you know, that's how it is. Like, those rumors came from somewhere. You know, if a trainer tells you, you know what, I don't think you should play, and you tell him, you know what, I'm going to play this Sunday, so that's about it. That players make more. We make more than a trainer. You're not going to tell me I can't play this game on Sunday, you know. And sometimes the macho thing kind of gets in the way of actual common sense. Because, I mean, even now, this is my second year, and I've never experienced migraines in my life. About 8 months after I retired, I mean, I get migraines like twice a week, and I never had that before. And I didn't know about all the stuff that went on with the whole, you know, the concussion syndrome. It was all this stuff I'm learning now. It's, oh, really? I wish somebody would have told me that before. But, of course, if they did, it wouldn't have made a difference anyway, because they were paying me to do something. So, there's definitely something going on, because I'm not the same person I was when I started this.
Now, when you look at that, is there any regrets? Do you say maybe I should have came back in that particular game or this particular game? Is there any regrets?
There's a couple times I probably should not have came back. I don't think those particular times were the reasons of, you know, the head problems I'm having now. You know, I've been doing this since I was 8 years old, and I'm 32, and I retired at, you know, 31. So, I mean, that's a long time. It's a lot of years of smashing your head. You probably couldn't isolate it down to one incident. But yeah, there's a couple times I should have came out, or I should have told the coach that, you know, this happened. Like, one time I blacked out. I didn't tell anybody. And one of my teammates helped me up, and he's like, "You all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." It was only 5-6 seconds, and no one really saw. It's kind of at the bottom of a pile, and I kind of got up and just sat down, and, you know, no one saw anything. It's kind of afterwards, on Monday, they kind of saw it on tape, but, you know, gameplay, no trainer came over and said anything, and, you know, I probably should have said something. There's a couple times, but, I mean, would I do it again? I would say just flat out yes, but the more I'm starting to learn about these, you know, the severity of this concussion syndrome, I'd probably say no.
Now, Jared, we want to switch gears now. We want to talk about Michael Vick. And you're a guy, when you played for the Carolina Panthers, you played Mike Vick. You saw him two times a year. Talk about Michael Vick then to Michael Vick now, because it definitely seems like this guy is a different football player.
Well, I saw him more than that. We were same draft class. We went through all the same stuff together, and he's in Atlanta. I mean, he's, you know, Michael Vick in Atlanta. If Michael Vick was throwing a party, every player in 200-mile radius was going. So, you know, I met him on several
occasions. Including yourself?
Yeah, including myself. Hell, I was the first one there. Well, let me tell you, right off the back, whenever I first met Mike, and I'm not saying this to try to be funny, but Mike has a kind of feminine mannerisms a little bit. And before I really got to know him, I thought Mike was gay. And
wow.
Not that there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
No.
There's, you know, but I that's the vibe I got from him. He just, you know, his mannerisms were just a little different. Let me just say different. And, you know, the more I got to know him, you know, the less I started to think about if he was gay or not. And he was just, you know, a good person. And so whenever I heard about the whole dog fighting thing, it really, I was betting game checks. I was like, there's no way Mike Vick is involved because that's just way out of his demeanor. So anyway, long story short, he's not gay. He messed up. And I would, you know, everybody messes up. I can't tell you, I got, two DUIs when I was playing. And I thank God that people didn't, you know, do what they did to him to me. I mean, you make mistakes. You got to remember, you know, you're 22, 24, 25. You're in your 20s. You're growing up. You know, he's
right.
What is he? 32 now. So that's just part
30,
of life.
30.
He's 30 now. It's part of life. You live and learn. You gotta, you know, the guy I see today is a mature person. I mean, he's a man now. You know,
mm-hmm.
Before he's a boy with money. Now he's a man trying to make it. You know, he's trying to redeem himself. And
right.
I tell you what, you will not hear any team player say anything bad about Vic, and I'll tell you why. Because when that whole thing went down with Michael Vick and the whole dog fighting thing, you know, there was $200,000-$300,000 purses, you know, on these dog fights. Where do you think that money came from? You think that came from bums off the street? You think bums off the street were betting $50,000 on a dog? No, there was other people involved in this thing. He didn't say nothing about nobody. So, and everybody in the league, that's just, everybody knows that. Everybody knows he didn't name one person's name that was involved. He just took the rap. So you would never hear another player say anything bad. Maybe a young guy that doesn't know really what's going on, but you won't ever hear a player from 2001 up say something bad about him.
Now, what about Michael Vick on the field? Do you see the difference on the field?
Oh yeah, I keep having to push a rewind on my TiVo about some of these passes. I mean, he's passing the ball like, you know, like an accomplished quarterback. When he was in Atlanta, he, you know, if he passed the ball, it was 50-50 that he was going to get intercepted. But he,
right.
I mean, as he's surrounded with the talent, he's got these young receivers with him. You know, his team has really, really, you know, bonded with him, and they've seen what he's gone through. And you know, I don't care how upset you are what happened is everyone's done stuff that, you know, you mess up on. But, you know, it's how you respond to things afterwards. And, you know, he's kind of trying to, you know, to me it looks like he's trying to keep his stuff right. You know, then you got someone like Pac-Man Jones. That's somebody that got a chance and got another chance and got another chance. And, you know, you only get so many chances. But sitting benching Cobb, I would have did it 9 out of 10 times. I mean, NFL's
right.
about winning, period. I don't care who's doing it. Doesn't matter what you – look, Braylon Edwards, I don't care what you did last week. Are you coming here today to show up to help me win this game, period? I don't care. The NFL does not care about your personal stuff. They care about W's. That's it. That's what so many people get caught up in, you know, oh, this, he did that. No one doesn't care on game day. Nothing matters on game day but winning. And Michael Vick gives him the best chance to win. I mean, there's not all – I can't – if a coach would sit in front of you, any coach on any 32 team would say, oh, I wouldn't start Vick, they're lying in your face.
Right.
That's like saying, I don't want to win. I mean, he's on fire right now. You always put the hot player on the field, no matter who it is.
Now, Jared, let's move to your Raider days now. And you played 5 years with the Raiders, and let's be honest, this is a dysfunctional situation. And I remember hearing Warren Sapp talking about how Al Davis would call a play down to the coaching staff. All in all, are the Raiders as dysfunctional as they look?
It's worse. And you got to remember, I came from the Carolina Panthers, which is, I mean, you know, Mr. Richardson out there, he's a player's player, you know, a player's owner. He played the game. He, you know, he goes up and over for his players. And, you know, Al Davis is a legend. He's one of the first coaches to have a black man on his team. But there is a time when everyone, you know, they got to let things go. And the, you know, the bad part about talking about the Raiders is they have a lot of good people in there. That organization is, you know, so many good, and I say good people. Like I told you before, NFL doesn't care if you're good or not. They care about winning. But, like, you get kind of connected to people, and they really, you know, they do up and beyond to try to help you out. They're just, their organization is just so bad. I can't tell how many guys I've seen come in from different teams just come in here and just be like, oh, my God, what is going on? I mean, from booking hotels for a team two nights before you travel and going to a two-star hotel. We stayed in some of the – I had to remember, am I in the NFL or am I in a peewee league? We stayed in some of the worst hotels as you can think of. And for an NFL team to be doing that just right off the bat, I mean, you're the top athletes in the world and you're staying in Motel 8. You know, that just that alone makes you sick.
I mean, was that bad?
Yeah, it was bad.
Jared, I guess an interesting question is you said they have good people in the organization, and so is it that there are good people working for, obviously, a bad boss who really don't – why are they still there then? I mean, I wonder from you then, from your vantage point, if you really are talented, let's say GM or, you know, assistant GM, why are you with that organization?
Yeah, you know, that seems to be the question of the century. Only thing I can think of is why somebody would stay there and, you know, I can't explain it. I've seen it every day. I've seen people, like the cheerleading coach quit this year. She was tired of it. Every year somebody on the other side, you know, you got the player side, then you got the staff side. They can't even keep a staff in that building. And the staff only can take so much. You know, they kind of exploit them with the whole, you know, you're working for the NFL, we can kind of push you around a little bit. And I mean, from year to year, there was 5-10 changes every year in that staff side, every single year. You wouldn't even recognize half the people ever. You was just like, who are you? Oh, well, I'm the new, you know, sales marketer. That's the first sign of big problems. If you can't keep a constant staff, you know, employed at your workplace, you're not going to run a football team.
Right. Now, you had the situation with Tom Cable where he punched the assistant. You had all that stuff. What's the inside scoop there? What is the inside story there from what you're hearing?
Well, from the guy that was sitting right next to it, I wouldn't say his name, but no plan. And he gives, I try not to say the guy's name. You know, I'm real close with a bunch of guys, so sometimes they feed me some information so I can blast people, but they said, just don't tell my name. I'm like, all right, no problem.
No, we don't need names. We don't need names.
Well, from a guy that was in the room when it happened, the little skinny coach, that's what I like to call him. We called him the little skinny coach. He pushed it. He was the threatening force, and Cable was the reactor. And, you know, you only can take so much, like I said. But every person I've talked to he had it coming. I mean, he was.
How many players though really cared about this?
Zero.
That was the interesting thing. I mean, I'm sure. It was pretty obvious that this was great for SportsCenter. It's certainly great for any the local sporting people. But to me, it doesn't really seem like most of the players. It does seem like Tom Cable is a player's coach.
He is, you know, and he is a good coach, and I like him as a coach. Is he the same coach as when I was there as today? No, he's definitely not the same. He doesn't carry himself the same. He doesn't look the same. He doesn't talk the same. You know, he doesn't have the enthusiasm he had before he was head coach. This is hurting him more than it's helping him.
Right. And hurting him in what way?
You know, sometimes when you know, everybody has their piece of the puzzle, you know. Not everybody's supposed to be a head coach. You know, not everybody's supposed to be the starting quarterback. No one's supposed to, you know, you have a puzzle. And me of all people, understand that. Because when I got drafted, first thing Carolina said is, Jared Cooper, we brought you here to replace Michael Bates on special teams, and, you know, that's the place for you, and we're going to use on third downs blitzing. I'm like, all right, sounds good to me. That's my piece of the puzzle, you know, and And I did that, and I excelled at that. That's what I wanted to do. It got to the point where they're like, "Coop, you want to play more safety?" I'm like, "No, I don't. That's not what I'm. That's not my. That's not what I want to do. This is what I'm working on." And, you know, that's why I got good at being a safety or a special teams player, because, you know, I knew my piece of the puzzle. That's where I'd help the team the best. You know, a coach, it goes in the same with coaches. You know, you're not every coach on that field is good. Just because you have that NFL logo on your shirt doesn't make every coach in that building, you know, a reputable person. You know, you hope so, and only thing that proves that is, you know, the longer that you're in it, you hopefully that the bad ones get weeded out, but that doesn't always work either. But, you know, it's...
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're saying he's a better assistant. He's a better served as an assistant than a head coach.
Yeah, it is. I think he just, he's kind of...
Is he in that role because of that organization? Because, I mean, and you know, when they were looking for coaches even during the Tom Cable search and then when his issue had come up, there really is no one that wants to be involved, it seems like, in a head coach role underneath Al Davis.
No, the one person that did want to be the head coach of the Oakland Raiders was our defensive coordinator, Ryan, and he, you know, obviously he went to the Browns now, but...
Rob Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan. Oh, sorry, did I just say Ryan? Yeah, Rob. He's the only one that wanted to be the head coach of that team. Even while the Kiffin was there, he's the only one that wanted to be the head coach. And he basically, you know, slammed the door on him, and once he did that, Coach Ryan was gone. He's like, I'm not staying here. I mean, almost overnight, like, it was, like, we were at practice one or off-season 1 minute, like, the next week, he had a barbecue for us and said, "Guys, I'm out of here." And he kind of told us whole spiel, I try to excel in this team, I'm trying to, you know, he said, "I don't want to be a whiny bitch, but I keep getting my door slammed on me, and I don't think I'm going to succeed here, so I'm leaving."
Did Al Davis actually call down plays?
You know, he did it in situations when things were getting bad, like, you know, it's 21-0. You know, he wanted to put his little input in, and, you know, rightfully so, it's Al Davis. But the worst thing that to me that he would do is on a Saturday night in Kansas City. Well, this was one of the times, he would change the offensive game plan. Now, it takes all week to put in an offensive game plan. Snap counts, plays, he would change it and hold the offense in meetings all night, the night before a game, to put in an offense for a Sunday morning game.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, and the offense was, they were livid. And, you know, of course they played bad. Of course, we never got mad at them because, you know what's going on. I can't blame you. You just got your whole game plan switched out in 24 hours. No wonder why you're jumping off sides every other time. You know, that happened on a couple occasions, and, you know, that makes it hard on the defense. I mean, now you're taking 85, 90 snaps opposed to 55, 60. You know, that's hard.
Now, Jared, we got another minute left. Real quick, the league is talking about going to an 18-game schedule. You have the situation with – you have the concussions and you have all these injuries. How realistic is an 18-game schedule? It's going to happen. It's all about money. But how realistic is it?
How many – right now you could probably count over 100 players that are out on IR, you know, big-name players that are out on IR that teams are upset about that aren't playing, and they're paying them. You know, they're paying them – $2-4 million a year, and they're just, you know, they're not playing. That's going to increase, for one. You're going to get a lot more injuries, a lot more IR time. You're going to have to pay a lot more guys, you know, in the long run. But is it going to happen? Yes, it is going to happen. And why? Because of money. Money makes everything go around. And, you know, the NFL is, you know, their own mob dealer themselves, so they're gonna make that money. You know, and guess what? If they have to pay somebody $2 million to sit there, oh, well, we just made $10 billion. You can sit there all you want. We'll bring somebody else in. It's going to happen.
Now, Jared, we can – I got to let you go, here, sir, but we can see your work at bleacherreport.com, correct?
Yes, sir. Just put in Jared Cooper.
Jared, we thank you for stopping by, and we definitely got to have you back in the future, sir.
Wish you nothing but
the best of luck.
I appreciate it. You let me know. I'll get you.
All right, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank Jared Cooper, Isaac Keith for stopping by. Thanks for all you who listen. Great show, good times. So you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/begin. That's blogtalkradio.com/begin.